Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I'm watching an instant classic here between the Jimmy Butler-less Bulls and the Kristaps Porzingis-less Knicks, which required about my seventh cup of coffee to kind of keep up during this game. But the good news is we are overloaded with questions again. We set a record for the most total number of mailbag questions from our listeners. We've probably got more TJ McConnell questions than anyone outside of his immediate family has ever been asked. We've also got a bunch of questions sort of longer term, you know, projection in terms of which player would you take over which other player and so on and so forth. But can I start just with a few comments on our listeners? Is that okay?
Yes, go for it.
Okay, it's clear to me that our listeners are composed of United States senators and high school debate coaches, because half the questions are clearly aimed, they're sort of like the Senate confirmation hearings that these guys are going through, where they're clearly aimed at agitating me. So we have this one group of people who is just trying to get me to flip out. So I get a lot of these, oh, what'd you think about DeRozan? I get a lot of those.
So wait, you're the person who's being confirmed?
Well, I think that you are too. I'm sure there's some, Zach LaVine troll questions in here as well. But we just have a listenership that's clearly trying to egg us on. A certain portion of it is just trying to get us to flip out and lose our minds. And then the other portion, they're clearly very attentive listeners, and they're trying to just do a wedge issue. I mean, they're the high school debate coaches that want us to basically argue abortion into the ground. You know, you take one side, I take one side, or, you know, climate change or whatever other wedge issue you want to throw out there. And I respect and appreciate both of these groups of people who are listening to us, but even just reading through these questions, my blood pressure started going.
Well, I just really enjoy your political analogies in general, and I hope we can work a new political analogy into every episode, because I think I thought it was going to be difficult for us to top Steve Kerr as Paul Ryan and Draymond as Trump, but clearly you're motivated, and I think we can get there. I guess we're in the middle of a confirmation hearing now. It's Thursday night. Who's winning the Knicks game?
Nobody. We're all losing. Trust me.
That's a good answer. Last night, I was at home watching Knicks Sixers, and my wife is currently in Cuba, and I was just really depressed about like the state of my life. I was like, wow, I could be out seeing the world, going on adventures, living my life, and instead I'm sitting here watching TJ McConnell duel with Derrick Rose. So it was a low point. I actually didn't have the strength to turn on Knicks Bulls tonight. But we should kick it off here because we have our first questions with our first questions are about the Knicks.
I was surprised. Did something happen there this week?
Yeah. Well, it's great. Twiggy Graves asks, how do you guys think Derrick Rose's legacy will end up? He's destined to be the only MVP not to make the Hall of Fame. Tony asks, which NBA team might benefit most from Carmelo's presence? We know which one would benefit from his absence. And then Books Not Wooks asks, what the fuck, New York Knicks? So I feel like we can take those one at a time, but which one do you want to start with?
Well, I think the last one probably. I mean, how do you explain what's happened? I mean, to me, it was just a mess. And as I wrote right after the Rose thing happened, I mean, his absence was unexcused and inexcusable. There's just no really way around that. The fact that he doesn't get suspended is strange. The fact that he shows up the next day and tries to play it off like a simple apology is going to make that all right. The fact that they completely fell apart when he didn't show up against the Pelicans, and then they get completely daggered by the Sixers in their next game. It seemed to me like Rose wasn't the only person who should be getting kind of dumped on this week in New York, and that I honestly felt bad for the coach, Jeff Hornacek, because what a situation to find yourself in. And I think really this goes to ownership and management, right?
Yeah, Hornacek already has kind of like a weathered look, and it's really only been like 40 games. Like, I swear to God, he had a 5 o'clock shadow during the Sixers game the other night, and I was like, man, you coach the Knicks now. This is your life. I'm sorry.
I honestly felt like if he was being completely open about the situation, he would have been like, well, at least Derek didn't throw a towel at me, you know? I mean,
yeah, it's true. Coming from the Suns, Hornacek has a low bar for, like, I don't know, institutional competence. But yeah, so first of all, big picture with the Knicks, this is normal for the Knicks. Let's be clear about that. Like, this is the team I've grown up with for the past 20 years, and it would be much weirder if they were building in a smart and patient way around Porzingis and making shrewd moves in the offseason. Like, this is the Knicks that I kind of love, and the crazier they are, the better.
Can I amend that slightly, though? The real what? Knicks would have been, they gave him Rose a max extension here during the season, and then he decides not to show up for work. So at least they haven't crossed that bridge yet.
Yes, that's true. They have not offered him an extension, so it could be worse. But nah, it's a mess. Like, they never should have traded for Derrick Rose. I think we all sort of agreed on that one. It looked like it was working for about 10 days. And again, like 2 weeks ago, I wrote, like, does anyone trust the Knicks not to screw this up? And they have gone full Knicks since then. So I don't know. Like, certainly watching the Sixers game, Melo does not look very engaged right now, which is like the most diplomatic way to put it.
Wait, and is that like NBA coach speak for he gets himself ejected on purpose so he doesn't have to watch his teammates play?
Yeah, well, he got himself ejected against the Pelicans, but then he also against the, like, his body language is just really, really bad. He probably has the worst body language in the NBA at this point in the year, which is tough with Boogie in Sacramento.
He kind of reminds me of you, actually. Once I get like 7 minutes deep into a Paul Millsap rant, and then you just decide you kind of want to end the podcast, all of
That's
a sudden...
True. My eyes glaze over. Yeah, you can't see me, but you know.
Yeah, you just head for the showers as quickly as possible.
So here's my question then. Like, I don't know the answer. When people start throwing around Carmelo trades, like, I don't really have an answer.
Well, I guess to take the other question then, I mean, is there any team that would benefit from taking on Carmelo Anthony? Because I look at his salary number and his skill set and the track
record. That's kind of what I mean.
Yeah. Like,
it's like I could see him on, you could sell me on the Clippers. And we actually had another question. I forget who it was from. I think it was from Bosnian Bear asked, like, which is great. I support that Twitter name. But it is basically, will the Carmelo for Blake deal ever actually happen?
No, because Blake is good. That's the thing. Like, Blake's pretty good.
Yeah, but if the Clippers don't think, I mean, you could make a case that having Carmelo in LA would lead to a more evenly spaced floor that would make sense.
Nah.
I mean, look, you could, the Blake and DeAndre pair doesn't work that well.
It works pretty well, and certainly Melo is not the answer. I think that they would hang up very quickly.
I'm just trying to make one case for Melo as a useful veteran weapon for the playoffs. Beyond that, I really don't know. You're right.
Yeah, I think it's just too difficult. I mean, if there was any teams that were seriously considering it, I mean, think about the contract number they'd have to take on would require, you know, parting with a really good player or having just some crazy cap situation where you had tons of space. And if you have that, you're probably not in the contender conversation. And what's the point of taking Melo on unless you're trying to have him be the piece that takes you over the top? Like, how disastrous would it be for, you know, one of these terrible GMs out here, let's just say like the Magic's GM, to just like go all in on Melo, sort of like he went all in on Serge Ibaka? I mean, where would that go? It'd just get you right where the Knicks are. You know, it's pointless.
What about Melo in San Antonio?
Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to think of a less pop player than Melo.
It may end in homicide, Melo and Pop, but look, they could use an extra weapon scoring. And
look, they already have an offense first guy who plays no defense in his 3 years past his prime. His name's Pau Gasol. They don't need Melo.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't think Melo is on the same level as Pau Gasol, I guess would be my counter to that. You can tell me that his game has fallen off and that he doesn't always try on defense. I would also say that he hasn't been in a real functional setting for the past few years. And that if you're asking me where I'd love to see him, I'd love to see him with Chris Paul, and I'd love to see him in a situation like, either Utah or San Antonio, surrounded by pieces who do the things that he doesn't do well.
I think the only person who can save him at this point is LeBron. And we're still a couple of years away from Melo doing like the mini mid-level deal where, you know, he just kind of joins up on a super team and gets super shameless about it. Otherwise, I think he is kind of unsalvageable.
Yeah. Okay. So beyond Melo, the other question, how do you think Derrick Rose's legacy will end up?
Well, here's the weird thing about the Hall of Fame. They just pretty much let everybody in, you know, and like, I almost can picture a situation where it's like 2040 and somebody's annoyed because Rose is like the only MVP who's not in. And there's this big sympathy case and everybody kind of rewrites his legacy and whitewashes some of the uglier parts. And they all blame it on the injuries and they say, okay, let's just let Derek in. But in terms of like, where is he going to stack up? I mean, he wasn't even in consideration for our top 100 players this year. I mean, we didn't even think about it.
And you're not getting into the Hall of Fame if you don't make the SI top 100.
Well, when you're 28 years old, yeah, there's no way. Like, forget about it. So
yeah, look, I don't even think the Hall of Fame is beyond it. Like, that's not going to happen. I think what's more interesting is just how much of a bummer the Derrick Rose conversation has become. And I think that's how he will be remembered. It's just like a historic bummer.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I went back and read an SI article. I think he was basically a junior or senior in high school, and it was about his brothers and how they had kind of shepherded him away from trouble. And
it was such a cool story.
Yeah.
And when he was good, he was so much more fun than almost anyone in the league.
Yeah, and just super, rootable, like someone you always wanted to kind of root for. And it's just gone so far off the rails in so many different points here in the last couple of years that in terms of his legacy, I think, you know, he's just kind of...
Well, for me, in D.C., we went through RG3. I'm not a Redskins fan, but like I watched all this happen up close. And the parallels with him and Rose are pretty wild because obviously there were the injuries. But the other thing is like, they both share a lot of the blame for the way things sort of unraveled. And they are both so tone deaf. Like Rose just will say and do things that are inexplicable. And like, you can't help but sort of get sick of him at the least. And that's before you even get into the trial over the summer and the allegations there, which, you know, we don't know what happened, but that doesn't make it any easier to root for him or watch him. And it's tough, man. Like both of those guys, but like by the end of RG3 and DC, I was kind of like, just please go away because this is not fun for anybody.
Yeah, I think the Rose, and that could just be a byproduct of that same kind of being sheltered by his brother's situation too, right? Like the tone deaf aspect of it. I mean, this is not a guy who's consulting with PR pros before he's making his statements, clearly. And I think that actually does kind of solidify his core group of fans because he still has, throughout all of this, a very loyal contingent of like D Rose stands. I mean, he's got 200,000 plus all-star votes. I mean, there's people out there who are still
bizarre
with him.
To me that people still stand out for him.
Yeah.
So one more question here, though. Do you believe his story on after the Monday night thing?
I mean, I don't want to get too much into the psychoanalysis side of it, but I mean, I think the family issue was that
is a confirmation hearing.
Okay.
Answer
well,
the question.
The family issue was Ron Baker beat out dad for his job late, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I think that was a family issue.
I'm in the same boat where I don't know what happened, but I don't totally buy the story. And he came out again tonight and reiterated it. And I don't know.
Well, look, if they believed his story, he wouldn't have been fined. You know what I mean? Like if there was a legit family crisis and he was to the point where he could not contact them, he explains what it is, they would not fine him for that. They would say most organizations would give you a pass in that kind of an extreme health circumstance.
That's my thing is if there were an extreme circumstance, we would know exactly what it was, we would know more details about it.
And he wouldn't be back in 16 hours, right?
Yeah.
By the way, apologizing for it.
Anyways, we should move on to something that's less depressing than the Knicks.
Well, hold on real quick. Do you think this does seal his time, though, in New York? I mean, they have to go to a different direction next summer, right?
Yeah, and I'm more curious about whether they find a way to move on from Melo at this point, because this isn't working, and it really would make sense for everybody if they could find a way to just rebuild around Porzingis and try to bottom out over the final couple months of the season. Like one of the silver linings for them is that it wouldn't take very much more losing to land in the top five, because nobody's really tanking yet, so they could get a really solid pick, and that to me just makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, and like, here's one more thing that we can kind of criticize Phil Jackson for. I mean, when he showed up, his big issues were point guard, coach, and then just overall talent of the roster. And I think at this point, you got questions with all three. And like, one of the craziest parts about this Rose scenario, you know, he's been pretty bad on the court, even though for his own standard recently after the injuries, it's maybe even like a resurgent type season. But like, the rest of the talent on that roster is so bad that they really need him. Like, if there wasn't a scenario where like they could come out and respond to his disappearance by saying, oh, you know, we're going to buy him out or we're going to waive him, he's not worth the hassle. Like, for so many other teams in the league, if it was still Rose and he was the one who wasn't showing up for work, like, that could be a legit conversation because he's not really that good. But when you're looking at Brandon Jennings, and honestly, the first time I saw Ron Baker, I thought that you had won a fan contest and they had put you in.
Many people have said I look like Ron Baker. Well, I don't see it, but yeah. It is what it is.
Well, every white guy who's got a buzz cut gets compared to me, so I'm with you on that. But they actually need him. I mean, that's the state of this roster. And that goes back to Phil Jackson. I mean, he's had multiple years here to try to figure out a solution at point guard. He hasn't done it. And I think you're actually right. I mean, I don't often agree with you, but I think their answer for the point guard of the future is going to have to come from the draft. And we'll see if he figures that out.
Yeah. Again, the Knicks are hilarious when they are dysfunctional. So they'll probably find a way to screw this up somehow. But like, it's all lining up for them to tank and land in the top five and draft Dennis Smith or Markelle Fultz or whoever it is. They're like, there are three or four guys. Frank, I haven't learned how to say your last name yet. But there are a lot of different options.
I got one more thing for you on Rose, though.
Okay.
Who pays him? I have a clear destination in mind for him this summer in terms of a contract.
I have no idea. And this is talking this through has made me realize that I love talking about the like dysfunctional Knicks, and I just don't like talking about Derrick Rose. But who do you think pays him?
Sacramento.
Yeah, that's fine. Sacramento is the closest thing the NBA has to China, and Derrick Rose, I don't think he's at the China point yet, but he's definitely at the Sacramento point of his career.
You know, Coach Cal's gonna, you know, put in a couple calls.
Oh man, yeah, that's right.
Boogie's gonna be desperate for a point guard. He's like, well, it could
Coach
be
Coach Cal, could the Vivek whisperer.
Could it be worse than Darren Collison? And you can hear Boogie saying it now. And then they're gonna have a huge hole at point guard, like they always do. They already tried the Rondo thing, but you know, like, I'm sure they didn't learn their lesson from that. I could just see that unfolding before my eyes. The biggest star to sell the new building, Derrick Rose, former MVP.
That's a really solid prediction. I hadn't thought about that. All right, let's run through some more questions here. From Braden, he asks, instead of switching players' heights, which two players could you see benefiting from switching a skill with each other?
Okay, so I want to just merge two players. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. I couldn't figure out how I wanted to answer this question.
Okay, I think what we need to do is take Jahlil Okafor and Bismack Biyombo and just combine them. So if you have Okafor's like one-on-one post moves on offense, which, you know, are pretty much useless at this point because he can't stay on the court on defense, and then you've got Biyombo's length and rim protection and general athleticism on defense, but he can't really do much of anything because his hands are terrible and, you know, he's got no real feel for offense, you put those two guys together, you could have a legitimate player who would actually like probably find a level of success in the NBA.
So I couldn't figure out whether if we're switching players' skills, does that mean that they don't have that skill anymore?
Yeah, I don't really. I mean, you're the one who picks these questions, okay?
I don't know.
I'm not
going to
parse Braden's like amazing mentality here. Like, I don't know what he was trying to get at, but I think what he's trying to say is like, who has a broken jumper that you want to give him Steph Curry's jumper? Like, you know, Ricky Rubio once told me, I really wish I had Steph Curry's 3-point shot, and I thought, well, so do I. But I think that's where he's going with this.
I would give LaMarcus Aldridge's jumper to Giannis. Ooh. And then I would give Giannis's defense to LaMarcus Aldridge.
That's pretty good. I like that.
I also really like Okafor. Someone should get Okafor's post moves. Okay. He's not using them, and we should give them to Biombo. That's a solid idea.
That was actually one of the best parts of the TJ game winner is like Okafor pretending that he was happy and joining in the celebration. Like, you've got Embiid who actually gets to play, like choking TJ out because he's so excited. And then, Okafor just kind of on the fringes of the celebration, like, yeah, guys, cool. That was awesome. Glad we did that.
Well, should we move to the Sixers portion of the podcast here?
Well, it's probably going to be the next 45 minutes, right?
Yeah. Tanner asks, where would you rank Joel Embiid among the young NBA stars compared to Kat, Porzingis, and the Brow? Austin asks, would you take Kat and Wiggins or Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid for the next 10 years? So some variation of this argument is happening constantly on the internet, which is pretty great.
Yeah, and on top of that, I got asked this question yesterday on a podcast, and I gave my ranking 1 to 4 on those guys. And to be honest, I can't even remember what I said, and I could make arguments for any of them. So it's like one of those completely unanswerable questions to me. And I think the most important thing is, are we saying perfect health on all these guys, or what are we saying?
Yeah, I think that's the distinction that matters most. It is pretty great, though. Like, I changed my answer on this on a weekly basis in 2016 and 17. But after watching the other night, like, I gotta say Embiid, if Embiid is healthy, he is on a different level than all of them except for Giannis.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, Giannis wasn't in this conversation, right? It's Brow,
no.
Porzingis, Kat, and Embiid. Yeah, I think if you're guaranteeing perfect health, you can make a really strong argument for Embiid. But I actually think I would still take Anthony Davis because the age gap between him and Embiid is not that great. And I think the polish and just the feel for Davis is sort of what would differentiate things for me. You know, that being said, like, Embiid's 3-point shot is super enticing.
He's just so big. Yeah. He's so hard to deal with down low, and he's so mobile that, like, he's just scratching the surface this year. And I think, like, if he can stay healthy, there's a whole other level waiting there too.
Yeah, I just think Anthony Davis's overall offensive game is still quite a bit ahead of his. And I'm not necessarily looking for somebody that I can pound, you know, and size-wise. I mean, in terms of finishing, I think Anthony gives you everything you want around the basket. And then I also think, well, in Embiid's defense, though, like, defensively, I think his impact in terms of his team's rating is going to wind up being significantly better than Anthony Davis is, sort of like when we look back. And also, like, Towns right now, you know, you look at Minnesota's defense, I think it starts with him. And, you know, I think both Porzingis and Embiid, you could say, are ahead of him defensively in terms of just overall impact at this point. So even though he was probably like the sexiest name of the entire group to start the season, he might be the one whose stock is kind of sliding back, you know? So,
yeah.
And that's what makes this very difficult for me, because I don't want to be reactionary to 2 months out of these guys' lives when they're all still super early 20s. And any of these guys could make us look like morons within 3 years. You know, like, one of these guys could break out and be an MVP. No doubt about it.
Yeah. And if I had to choose, I would say Kat, because the health issues with Embiid scare me off. And I think Kat is a little bit more dominant night to night than Porzingis. And I just feel like we're sort of just scratching the surface with Towns as well. So I don't know. What's important is that we keep arguing about this for the next 5 years.
If you're enjoying this program, then check out the Seth Davis Podcast.
J.D. Vance, he's the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Hillbilly Elegy, which has really touched a chord in American society.
One of the most interesting things is how Black Americans who come from pretty tough circumstances seem to identify with my book as much as anyone.
Listen and subscribe to new episodes every Tuesday of the Seth Davis Podcast.
Well, hey, I want to skip to another question here. This one came in from Dan, and he says, Andrew, I need your all Golliver team. And it's not just the Spurs lineup. And then he says, Ben, I need your all sharp team. It's not just Zach LaVine five times. So clearly he's trying to get us to kind of pinpoint the other person's fetishes, so to speak, basketball wise. And this is what I mean about these wedge issue questions. I mean, this guy is really just angling for us to freak out on each other.
Yeah. Do you have, I put some time into your team. Do you have a roster for me?
Not only did I put some time into your team, I made a formula.
Okay.
I charted this. So my x-axis is poor defense, because you don't care about defense. You don't watch defense. So I want only the worst defensive players. My y-axis is going to be usage rate, because you love the bucket getters. You need guys who are just going to shoot constantly, right?
Sure.
And then my z-axis is basically distance from the Pacific Northwest. So I'm looking for players who have some level of ties to Seattle or Portland. They're going to be like the true Andrew Sharp ideal player, because basically you need a guy who's from Seattle, who shoots a ton and doesn't guard anyone. That's sort of your sweet spot, right?
Yeah.
Well, surprise, surprise, there's a lot of guys just like that. So let's start. Number one, captain of your team, Isaiah Thomas. No question about it. Worst defensive player in the league. Incredible bucket, incredible bucket getter, and from Seattle.
Against the Wizards last night, he hit a three and turned around and high-fived Floyd Mayweather. It was pretty amazing.
And then he gave Floyd his jersey, and you got jealous, right? Like, you were like, come on, man. Like, okay.
No, that was in the middle of the Celtics-Wizards brawl, so I was not paying attention to what was happening with Floyd at that point.
Okay, so
people's noses were getting poked.
Alongside Isaiah, you're going to have Zach LaVine. I mean, that's obvious. He fits all of your categories, and he has very high rankings on all of my X, Y, and Z axes.
Okay.
Then Jamal Crawford, obviously. Then Damian Lillard. And, you know, he's Portland, not Seattle, but definitely fits the other criterias. And then the fifth spot, there's really no Pacific Northwest tie. So we had to stretch this one a little bit. But Devin Booker is clearly, you know, filling out your five. As you'll notice, you don't have any players above 6'3 or 6'4.
That's accurate.
You have five guys who need five balls to do anything. Oh, and by the way, how is Devin Booker's All-Star campaign going? Didn't you promise me he was going to make it this year? I haven't really heard a lot of buzz there.
I definitely did not promise that he was going to make the All-Star game, but he is really rounding into form in Phoenix, to be honest with you. He's hitting for 20 a game at this point. The shooting percentage was a little low for the first 2 months or so, but he's solid. After I will also be honest that I was pretty freaked out by his first 6 weeks. But my point, I think we argued about Booker. I said that he was better than the 100th best player in the league, and you were aggressively wrong on that.
Okay. By the way, I forgot to mention, all five of those guys are currently ranked 400th or worst in defensive real plus minus, which you, which by the way, you also hate. So that was a key thing tying them together. But can I also add one final addendum to my squad here?
Yeah.
Okay. So a broken clock is right twice a day, and you have managed to find one player who has no ties really to the Pacific Northwest, who's amazing on defense and who doesn't really shoot a lot, who you love. And I think I'm going to make him the captain of your team. And that man is Tony Allen.
Tony Allen is definitely on my team. I also thank you for including Jamal Crawford. He is probably my favorite basketball player of all time.
I nailed this list, didn't I? Give me some credit for this.
You sort of did. I would also, Giannis has had my heart for several years now, and would make, I think Giannis's defense would help hold this squad together better than what we presently have.
You don't want Lillard starting at center for you?
Yeah, Giannis and Kat would really round this team out. Anyways, I'll get to here are your five. The first one is and Dan said I can't pick just the Spurs lineup, but I have to start with Kawhi Leonard.
Okay.
Because do you remember last year when we did a round table and had to pick which player we would start a team with?
I don't remember that, but that sounds like something I would do.
Yes, you picked Kawhi Leonard, which is just like an outrageous claim.
God forbid you want to win 60 games every year.
No, there are legitimately like 10 different players I would pick before Kawhi Leonard because there's more to basketball. I mean, if you were actually starting a franchise and Kawhi was your best player, you would have a pretty tough time catching on.
Yeah, it's crazy the slump the Spurs have been in since they got him. It's unbelievable.
it's fine. Next one is Millsap, which is, again, if you want to win 52 games and get your ass kicked in a meaningful playoff series, Paul Millsap is your guy. I picked James Harden, which is outside of your comfort zone, but the Adidas James Harden party changed your life for anyone who listened to the pod a couple months ago. And Marc Gasol, obviously. And then Tobias Harris just seems like the type of like random NBA player that you're weirdly high on.
Well, you had a lot of momentum going there until you got to Harden and Tobias Harris. But I appreciate that you nailed it. You know, you nailed three for sure. Marc Gasol, Paul Millsap, and Kawhi Leonard. I mean, I'm definitely rocking a low defensive rating with that squad.
Who am I missing rocking a low defensive rating? Jesus Christ. Who am I missing beyond that?
Well, one of the reasons why I didn't put Giannis on your team is because I thought we might have to fight over custody for him.
Yeah, I get Giannis. Get out of my face.
I think one of the guys, and this kind of falls into the pitfall of the question, and you just can't pick all the Spurs, but like a very quintessentially me guy is Danny Green for sure.
I almost picked Danny Green. He was in the Tobias Harris category of random dude who you irrationally like or care about.
I think instead of James Harden, I probably would have gone Chris Paul. Like, I'm not Chris Paul's biggest fan, but if we're talking about guys who sort of like fit my bill, you know, he's getting way less all-star votes than the other point guards.
I don't know, man. The James Harden Adidas party sounded pretty amazing.
Okay.
Let's move on, though. All right. We skipped over the other Sixers questions. So
my bad.
Here, from KY, he says, am I just being an Arizona homer or is TJ McConnell good? Does he have an NBA future? Bo Outlaw, not that Bo Outlaw, or maybe that Bo Outlaw, asks the same thing about McConnell. I mean, the answer is clearly yes, right?
Well, he was one of the most all anomaly type players when he came in. You know, he went like 3 months without taking a free throw attempt, even though he was playing huge minutes for them, which was one of my favorite like things that has ever happened in the NBA.
Yeah.
But he's come a long way. I mean, he cooked Derrick Rose. Like, I'd rather.
That might be the greatest indictment of Derrick Rose's defense we'll see all year. But yeah, look, the Sixers need cult heroes right now. They have Embiid, but they need people that fans actually give a shit about. And TJ McConnell is that guy. He has a job for life, if only because Brian Colangelo is so terrified of like the hinky Sixers fans that he would never cut TJ McConnell.
Well, we always talk about these guys who are making tons of money who do things that aren't very helpful, you know, ball stop, jack up tons of shots, don't really work hard. And there is a spot for guys like McConnell who do kind of all the opposite of those things while also making basically, you know, peanuts by an NBA standard. So does he have an NBA future? Sure. Why not?
Yeah, no, look, as a backup point guard, he is good. Like, he's much better than Trey Burke, I would think, right?
Well, that's damning with faint praise. I mean, Ron Baker and you are better than Trey Burke at this point.
My point is that I watch Trey Burke every night, and I'm like, man, I don't know how it has gone so wrong in the NBA, but it really has, and you do not belong on the court. And I think TJ McConnell can clear that bar and give the Sixers like a solid 10 to 15 minutes a game.
I think he already has. I mean, I would take McConnell right now in a heartbeat over Trey Burke.
So Bo Outlaw had another question.
Oh, hey, by the way, this is one more thing about our listeners in this mailbag. See, I think they heard us talking about how Gus was the MVP, you know, sending in all these questions, because we had a bunch of people who sent in like multiple questions, clearly trying to get the shout outs. And then we also had some people email us like 7,000 page emails.
We had some intense emailers. I did not realize that your email was publicly available. I also didn't realize that you had open DMs, which I think is insane. How often do you get trolled by people?
Not that often, actually.
I feel like, I don't know, I like having my privacy online as far as DMs are concerned. But yeah, it was a good batch this week. We've got, there's no way we're going to get to everything, but we will save them for next week.
Okay, so one of these MVP candidates who sent in multiple questions was Bo Outlaw. And what was his other question? Can the Sixers get Kentavious Caldwell-Pope?
Yeah, and my answer to that is I think that's a really solid idea for them.
I could see why they would want him. I mean, he fits, but don't you think that's a kind of piece that, you know, Stan lets leave kind of over his dead body? You know, one of those situations where he's kind of deemed not like untouchable, but they'll just match any price and they'll do whatever it takes to keep him.
Yeah, first of all, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a Clutch Sports client. And so I sort of support this I support all Clutch Sports conspiracy theories. And so I like the idea of him uniting with Ben Simmons in Philly. And with Stan, I don't know how you pay all those guys. Like, you can't max out everybody.
Yeah, I mean, the only guy who's really making max money kind of going forward is Drummond, right? Like, Reggie's number is going to look a little bit better. I mean, I just feel like he's one of the most indispensable pieces on that team. Where if I was, like, prioritizing, like, do I have to trade some of these other salaries so that I can pay KCP? I think that's probably how I do it, rather than just, like, letting KCP go, you know?
Okay, well, then I have a different question here. Trade proposal from Spencer Vail. This is a few weeks old, actually. Thoughts on a favors for McCollum trade? Fits needs both ways. Lone Wolf asks, Steven Adams for CJ McCollum, would you do it? And I include these because every week someone sends us some crappy offer for CJ McCollum, and the Blazers would definitely say no to almost any of those. Well, but some team should be trying to trade for CJ McCollum.
Because I was going to go the other way on both of them. I would not trade Derek Favors to get CJ McCollum, and I would not trade Steven Adams to get CJ McCollum. And this, once again, highlights the importance of my Andrew Sharp formula, though, because CJ McCollum is a high-usage bucket getter who plays no defense and who is a close proximity to the Northwest. So, of course, you would overvalue him and want him and view him as an all-star type player. I think it's harder to find a Steven Adams two-way impact center if I'm Oklahoma City, given the other pieces.
Is he really a two-way impact, though?
Yeah, I mean, sure. For sure. I think he's their second most important player right now, and they have a pretty good record, you know?
Does he average, what does he average offensively in a playoff series?
I mean, he's going to give you 10-plus, but that's not really his job. I mean, his job...
That's what I'm saying. He's not really a two-way guy.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's not hopeless on offense. And that's kind of the standard you're looking for from a starting center who has a big impact defensively and on the glass and has sort of a physical presence. I mean, they're on very similar contracts. Oh, for sure. Absolutely.
Anyways, the reason I bring that up is because I don't think the Blazers are trading McCollum for either one of those guys. But if I were the Pistons, I would try to trade Andre Drummond for CJ McCollum.
So he can fight for the ball with Reggie Jackson and they can lose even more than they do currently?
No. What I would do then is try to turn around and flip Reggie for Nerlens Noel.
Okay, so who's playing point guard?
CJ.
Okay.
Serious? That's a good idea.
No, that's a bad idea. That's just a really bad idea. I mean, I don't like Reggie at all, but if you're just going to turn your team over to CJ and have him be your primary playmaker for others, you're going to have a whole bunch of guys standing around wondering why they're not ever touching the ball.
I don't know. I think you could have Nerlens be 80% of what Drummond is and have CJ McCollum be a much better version of what Reggie Jackson is. And then suddenly the wings, who are not perfect, would be good enough to make that work.
Why exactly do you think Nerlens is as good as an all-star center who's won a gold medal and is, you know, one of the better young prospects at his position? I mean, why are these guys even in close to being in the same conversation for you?
Nerlens is a very solid rim runner who is probably as good, if not better, defensively than Drummond. And I just think that Drummond has been kind of underwhelming quietly for the last year or so. And at some point, people are going to realize that the reason that team isn't working is because the best player is not as good as people think.
Yeah, that's a tough sell. I mean, you're talking about, you know, the third best player on a, you know, okay, granted they've won, what, 4 out of 5, but this is still like a 10 or 11 win team. And he's been having issues staying on the court. He's got health problems. I mean, I think you're really overrating Nerlens Noel.
Okay, we'll see. Time will tell. At some point, he's going to get more than 18 minutes a night, and we'll see who's right about Nerlens.
If we're judging this on is he going to wind up being 80% as good as Andre Drummond, I don't think you're ever going to be right on that.
Okay, we'll have to wait and see. Trevor asks, if you could move any player from a non-contender to a pseudo-contender to make the playoffs competitive, who moves? I would move Damian Lillard to the Utah Jazz.
Okay, see, now you're talking, because you're talking about the Jazz as a contender, and I'm in on that.
Pseudo contender. They still need a little bit more scoring.
And that's another reason why I wouldn't trade Favors for McCollum, going back to that question, because I think Utah's good. Like, why break that up? It's fine. You know, and Favors got some injury issues and so forth. He can probably play better than he has, but if I'm Utah, I'm not really trying to mess with what's been working pretty well so far, especially when they have momentum. Now, if you're just going to give them a Damian Lillard because they've got nobody else to really kind of create for them,
because this is a hypothetical mailbag, sure, we can give them Lillard.
Yeah, why not? Let's do that. Let's give them Lillard.
That would be awesome. But just to clarify something, Portland is the one who says no to the Favors for McCollum deal.
No.
Favors is... Every time I look up, Favors is injured, and he's just never been that productive. And Utah has other options where they can be almost as good without him.
I do think he's a piece that could wind up being kind of expendable, even though he looked like he was going to be a locked in franchise type guy for them coming into this season. Just because Gobert is taking his game to a new level. They're getting stuff from Lyles. So, oh yeah, by the way, Gobert should have been on the All-Golliver team for sure.
No, Favors is the perfect NBA Twitter Hall of Famer for the Golliver All-Stars. I can't believe I didn't have Derek Favors on there. That's on me, okay? I apologize.
you're going to take that one.
Yeah.
In terms of other players who were just going to dump on, I mean, did you have other thoughts on that one? That's kind of a weird question because... like, we've been spending so much time with real trade scenarios, like trying to get Millsap onto a team.
Yeah, nah. I just Lillard on the Jazz would be so much fun and would make a Jazz Warriors series so much fun. Beyond that, whatever. We'll see.
I mean, I feel like the real answer to this is just Anthony Davis to any team in that second tier, right? Like Anthony Davis to the Celtics, and that might solve a few of their problems.
Yeah, that would be pretty solid too. All right, next question. Ephraim Chuck asks, how'd you like DeRozan's takeover in the second half against the Celtics? Speak of the devil.
Well, I did follow up with him on this one, and I was like, come on, man. Like you saw that. Like, that was against Isaiah Thomas. Like, he's shooting over a 5'9" point guard who's continually getting switched on to him from, 12 feet. Like, you can't give him too much credit. And this is one of the guys who admitted that he was just trying to get me to flip out because he agreed with me. So
wait a second. Yeah. You're not going to give DeRozan credit for that game the other night?
Well, here's an interesting question on DeRozan. Is he an all-star this year?
Dude, come on. Like, I support trolling, but this is over the line.
It's not. Okay, look, there's 5 point guards.
No. He was so clutch in that game.
I agree, but he also had Isaiah Thomas, the worst defensive player arguably in the NBA, guarding him on switches. And I think that was a rope-a-dope from Brad Stevens, because I think he's laying the groundwork for the playoffs because he's just hoping that DeRozan will shoot the Raptors out of the playoffs again. If they match up in the second round, it'll just be mid-range, and he'll have Avery Bradley guarding him, so the percentages will go way down. I mean, obviously, they're not going to let DeRozan shoot 12-footers over Isaiah Thomas and take four L's in a playoff series. That's just never going to happen, you know? So I think that was a little bit of a strategy.
That's actually a really good theory.
I think that was some strategery by Brad. And if it's not, that's really bad coaching. But 5 point guards in the East who all have a legit case: Kyle Lowry, Kyrie Irving, Kemba Walker, John Wall, Isaiah Thomas. And then you have DeRozan at that two guard. Now, if Dwayne Wade gets voted in by the fans and somehow sneaks through the electoral college of the media and the player vote and takes a spot, that starts to get pretty tight. Would you really take DeRozan over any of those 5 point guards?
Get out of here, okay? DeRozan has been awesome this season. I understand. I'm not like a huge DeRozan guy.
Okay,
but,
so
like,
I'm saying rank those five guys. Like, rank the 5 point guards, and where do you plug DeRozan in on, like, who has to make it? Because to me, like, Lowry has to make it, and I will even say Kyrie has to make it, and I think John Wall at this point has to make it. And then I think Isaiah, based on how he's played in terms of the playmaking he does for others and how well he's been the number one guy for that Boston offense. Because, by the way, DeRozan's not the number one guy for his offense. That's Lowry. I think Isaiah's got to make it. So then it comes down to Kemba versus DeRozan, right?
Yeah. And no, I'm not letting you box me into this. This is incorrect. I'm not dignifying this. Like, I would take all 5 point guards, but I don't think that any of them get a spot at the expense of DeRozan, because he's been excellent. And like down the stretch the other night, he was coming up huge, and he is like, the degree of difficulty with his game is ridiculous, but he's pretty reliably on for them and gives them an option in the half court at the end of games that is pretty huge. Now, if you want to say, I don't think he can keep this going in the playoffs, like, that's fine, but he...
Well, there's other holes, though. I mean, he doesn't guard. He doesn't guard.
We're not arguing about DeRozan right now. This is too ridiculous. He is an all-star.
All I'm going to say is this. I would definitely have him over Wade, but if Wade gets into the starting spot and the squeeze is on, there's a legitimate argument. And I talked to some of the numbers guys, like the guys who are even further on the statistical bent than I am. And they're all pretty down on DeRozan just because his advanced stats don't really match the eye test of the pretty, you know, turnaround jumpers that you fall in love with.
I'm not even in love with DeRozan. He is just clearly an all-star.
Okay.
All right. I'm disgusted with you right now. I might quit the podcast.
All right. Well, we got another question from, I don't know how to say his name, like Fawd Sewell 22. And he tagged this to me by saying, this is from a Canadian who actually likes you guys, which I thought that was pretty good, right?
Yeah.
His question was, what teams other than the Cavs and the Warriors do you see winning an NBA title in the next 5 to 7 years? And I thought that was a great question. You can go a lot of different ways with this one. What would you say? Or what's your first thought?
My first thought is, pick the Celtics based on how many assets they have.
Agree. They're in my conversation.
I would throw out the Wolves based on blind allegiance. And, you know, Giannis and the Bucks are definitely in the mix. It's just hard because, like, the new CBA is, like, it's really tough to imagine how this is going to look. 4 years from now, I would also throw in the Lakers.
Okay, so here's my thought. I would not have the Lakers in there. I was looking kind of for structure with the organization in terms of, do I trust the owner? Do I trust the GM? Do I trust the coach that's in place? And then what kind of talent do they have available, right? That took me to Boston immediately. I think that's sort of the correct answer. You're going to hate me for this, but I do think the Spurs have to be in this conversation, even though their talent is kind of in transition at this point. When you have all the big things mastered and you've got a centerpiece like Kawhi, That's fewer questions than where like the Bucks are at right now in terms of, you know, proving contender status. So I think the Spurs have to be there. Another one that's off the radar, I think, is Miami. Of course, that's going to be contingent on like nailing a draft pick or two and like convincing a couple guys in free agency to go there. But they have this weird way of rebounding very quickly, reloading on the fly, in part because of that market. So I definitely trust like Spo, Riley, and ownership and so forth. And then my off the radar one though, and this might actually catch you by surprise. It's kind of your similar to your Timberwolves. I actually think the Sixers have to be on this list too. And they have to be in the top five because even though they've screwed up so many picks and I've laughed and mocked them for that, they have the potential to have like the number one and the number four pick this year, right? And you have that on top of Simmons, on top of Embiid. Like even if Okafor and Noel both wind up being zeros for them because of trades or whatever else, they could still have, you know, like four top four picks who are all potential superstars on the roster simultaneously. And if you fast forward that 6 or 7 years, that could easily be the best core, even though they screwed up years and years of picks before that.
Yeah. I mean, look, if Embiid is healthy, he grades out as well as anybody. And it's like, you almost don't need that many more superstars to be successful. What do you think of Ben Simmons?
I was high on him coming into the draft, and it's always bad when the guy disappears in a kind of a formative stage when he should be kind of learning on the fly. So that has me a little bit concerned. The lack of shooting isn't great, but I think the real kind of question for these guys and what's killed guys like Rondo is if you can't get to the basket and finish and you can't shoot, you're useless. So I guess I'm trusting Ben Simmons to be able to get to the basket at some point, drawing contact, finishing around the rim, and having that be sort of a staple part of his game if he's going to be the main ball handler and playmaker. And I think that's going to be how they have to use him. Like I've heard people talk about, oh, the Sixers should go chase Kyle Lowry. To me, if you do that, you're basically throwing away Ben Simmons' value.
Yeah.
He's got to be on the ball.
Okay, so let me read you another question from Desi O'Grady. Should the Sixers trade Ben Simmons? All caps, need to surround Embiid with shooters. Hashtag trust the process. And then someone else hopped up in the mentions and said, this is the dumbest comment I've ever heard. I don't think the Sixers should trade Ben Simmons, but I also don't think the Sixers should have drafted Ben Simmons because... Well, I put it this way. I understand drafting Ben Simmons if you don't think Embiid is going to be healthy because theoretically he has like the highest ceiling. But Brandon Ingram would be a much better fit on a team with Embiid dominating.
Yeah, my thing with the spacing and the shooters is that if Embiid's a shooter and he sure looks like he is, then you're okay. You know, as long as Simmons can get to the basket, you're going to have enough space. And if Embiid can play center and you can surround him with smaller wings, I think you can get by with that. You know, I think you can have a lineup that is Embiid, Simmons, and then three shooters, you know, in that sort of KCP mold that people were talking about before. And that can be an unbelievable two-way lineup. Like, I think that can work for you.
Yeah, I like that argument. We'll see. I really don't know what to think of Simmons. I didn't like his game very much at LSU. I like have heard some things that he just, I don't know. It's kind of suspect. And maybe he will be really good and all of that will look ridiculous. But I'm still pretty in on Brandon Ingram.
Yeah, no, I hear you. And we actually had a question about Brandon Ingram, which was if you could do this from Gregory, if you could do the draft over, where does he go? I'm wondering if this is in response to Ingram's kind of rough rookie year. Because, you know, he's way down the list on a lot of the advanced stats. The Lakers obviously have kind of fallen apart. He's certainly looked his age. I described him recently to somebody as like the most aesthetically pleasing, terrible player in the NBA right now. His turnovers are pretty. His misses are pretty, but he's turning the ball over a lot and screwing up a lot.
That's the thing with him. His misses, because if the jumper's there, there's really nothing to worry about. And I feel like the jumper's there. He has a lot of really pretty misses, and eventually those are going to start to fall.
Yeah, and to be clear, I'm not worried about him. I think he's going to be awesome. I think he goes one or two, right? I mean, who else is going to jump him? Yeah. And to me, I always had Simmons one. I don't like to change my mind this quickly, especially without seeing him play yet. But I wouldn't criticize the Lakers for taking him where they did. I still think he's their highest ceiling prospect. I have him over Russell and Randall. So
me too. I see a lot of people like trash the Lakers core. And I'm like, look, if D'Angelo Russell is your second best player and Julius Randle is your third best player, like, you're in great shape. It just is a question of whether you believe in Brandon Ingram. And I really do. So who knows? Speaking of the draft, Paul asks, do you still consider the Bucks to have an F draft grade?
Was that, and did you do grades or did I? I can't even remember.
I did the grades. And so I had to go to a wedding at 7 a.m. the next morning. I had to get on a flight.
Here comes
so
the excuses. The mail job. Just say no. You mailed it in. It's fine.
No, I didn't mail it in. I just had to file that night. And I had to file before I had to, as soon as the first round was over, I had to get it in. So I gave the Bucks an F based on the Thon Maker pick. I would not have given them a, I loved Malcolm Brogdon. You can go back and read my mock drafts. I was into him. And so I would not have given them an F based on that. Anyways, Paul, this dude has hit me up on Twitter like repeatedly, like monthly, harassing me about the my F grade. And the answer is I do not give them an F overall, but like the Thon pick is definitely still an F.
Okay, so just to be clear though, I mean, Thon is averaging 2.3 points and 1.2 rebounds.
In only
4.5 minutes per game here as a rookie. So if you do the per 36, he's averaging 19 and 10. Are you sure that's enough?
You know, I don't know. This dude, after like Vegas games with the Bucks, he would hit me up and quote stats. I'll write things about the Bucks, and Paul will always hit me up. So listen, I'm super high on Malcolm Brogdon, just like the entire NBA, and the Bucks do not get an F for that. But the Thon pick still makes no sense. They would like, even especially if Giannis was going to be this good, like you want someone who can help.
I know how you could make it up to Paul though, and you can also piss off the Sixers fans simultaneously. I think that you should start the Brogdon for Rookie of the Year campaign and just say, look, Embiid's not a real rookie. You know,
yeah.
And just have that, like, look, I'm not going to vote for somebody who has an asterisk, and then just go all in on Brogdon. First of all, our bosses at SI would love you because that's getting so many clicks, more clicks probably than any Bucks related thing that's not Giannis centric. But second of all, I mean, you could really get some serious like brushes with death at that rights to Ricky Sanchez party you keep talking about.
Yeah, that's true. I love Malcolm Brogdon, and it's amazing how many different fan bases are pissed off that they don't have Malcolm Brogdon, because he fills such a specific need that is like super valuable today.
By the way, Paul is another one of these U.S. senators, though. I mean, this is your Senate confirmation hearing. He's coming after you because of your draft grade that you mailed in because you were going to a wedding.
I love Paul. I hope he is tweeting at me as the Bucks raise a championship banner in like 4 or 5 years.
Hey, I have another really funny question here.
What?
Okay. It came in from Brian. Brian says, hey, Ben, here's a little psychological perspective. I think he realizes we like to play pseudo-psychologist. He says,
yes,
Kevin Durant has learned behaviors about late clock situations that are highly reinforced by his 9 years at Oklahoma City. In order to implant new triggers, Draymond had to make a highly memorable negative event to change his behavior. That's actually a smart decision. Basically, you have to condition Durant to hate reactions to the late contested three so that you will break his pattern. Breaking that habit is way more important for the Warriors' title chances than losing that game to Memphis in January. So basically what he's arguing for is sort of like the shock dog collar treatment. Where anytime KD starts pulling up like in clutch situations, he wants to take a three off the dribble over Zach Randolph. Basically, they want to shock him into submission so he doesn't do that and like hands the ball over to Steph. And Does he have a point? Like, should this be a thing?
I lost it when I first of all, this was a 5-part series of tweets from Brian. I lost it at the phrase highly memorable negative event.
Because that's what it was. I mean, when Draymond's like fist pumping and flipping out, practically going into the stands because he's so beside himself, that is a highly memorable negative event.
Yeah, it depends on how close you are with Draymond. I feel like if you're around Draymond every day, you're just like, ah, that's Draymond. It is what it is. But from a psychological, first of all, no one should ever read this question to Draymond, because then he'll feel emboldened to really flip out like on a daily basis. And I also think that like from a psychological perspective, this approach has actually probably been debunked in terms of its value in teaching.
I mean, it seems like it's straight out of like the television show 24 or something, right? Like,
yeah, look, if we have any psychologists out there who want to send a rebuttal, it would be much appreciated, because I don't think this is right. But I do think that Draymond was right about how crappy a shot that was from KD. So it is what it is.
Yeah, well, maybe what we can get is Kerr to have like multiple shot callers, right? So like, if KD starts to pull up for a bad shot, he can push one button. If Draymond starts to kind of lose it for no reason off the ball, he can push another button. If Klay's just like standing around, kind of floating and not involved, he can push another button. And, you know,
This is why so many NBA players are opposed to the like the biometric measurings. It starts with biometrics and suddenly there's shot callers. It's not going down that road. But this has been good. We have a lot more questions that we will get to next week. And, until then, I think that's it.
Thanks, Andrew. Good luck with the All-Sharp team. We all know who would win. It certainly would be the All-Golliver team. We have a winning mentality, a bunch of competitors. Yes. We're not playing for the future. We're sharing the basketball.
I'm a little bit upset with how bad my team was, but it's fine. I feel like you're turning me into like Mr. Highlight or whatever, and I do like good basketball players also. It just happens that like Jamal Crawford speaks to me on a spiritual level.
Yeah, no, this is your guilty pleasure team. That's the team that you would choose, like if you really had your choice. You're not fronting for anybody. I picked the actual Andrew Shum team.
Yeah, man. Good luck with Danny Green and Derek Favors. You know, live your best life. I'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Risk management. All right, man. Talk to you.
This has been a digital media production. Find your voice.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.